Monica, and welcome back to the Home Health Occupational Therapy Explorer podcast. This is the space to explore both the science and the art of home health occupational therapy, and I'm super excited for today's podcast, which, yes, could be true that I'm excited about all of them, which is also a good sign. Before we dig in, because I do have a little bit of housekeeping before this one, I first just want to say, if you are new to home health OT, welcome. I think it is fairly assumptive, but also fairly true for me to say that on behalf of all of us out here doing home health OT, we are super happy you're here. And it is my hope that as you are new or just in the field, and I take my own advice for this too, that we may truly come together and spend time with each other, learning from each other and just being with each other and getting to know and support each other. So if you're new, especially, please remember you're not alone and reach out to your state association, to the national AOTA, to just a local home health OT to have coffee. But you are not alone. And so thank you so much for listening. And if you've signed up to get the emails that I send out before I do a podcast release that has the link, and for some reason, if you have not been getting those, please let me know. They should be coming from Monica at homehealthotexplorer.com. And again, for some reason, if you are not getting those, send me an email at that same email, and I will problem solve that. And if you want to sign up to get those emails, because they usually have kind of a funny story in them anyways, you can do that by going to homehealthotexplorer.com, and there's a link there to sign up. So speaking of state associations, I want to give a massive shout out to ARIZOTA, which is the state association for OTs in Arizona. And they recently invited me to be part of the state conference, which was held September 20th in Phoenix, and to be able to do a live podcast there. So just a massive thank you shout out to ARIZOTA. And also a really honest review of this community, which is that this was, I think, the best state conference that I've been to. And I genuinely noticed a kindness in this community, a passion, a willingness to do high quality occupational therapy and to truly meet other and network with other OTs. So if you are at all sit in the fence, or if you are in Arizona, I would highly encourage you to get plugged in to ARIZOTA. You can do that by going to www.arizota.org. They've got journal clubs, they've got Zoom meetings, they've got state conferences, job postings, a list of all the schools in the area. Whether it's Midwestern University, Northern Arizona University, Pima Medical Institute, or the Arizona School of Health Sciences, and soon to be Huntington, which leads us to the guest for today, or one of two guests. So of the willing participants for today's episode, Dr. Ruth Ford and Emily Riley were willing to come on and talk about some topics that relate to home health OT. Dr. Ruth Ford is from Huntington University, and she was in town from Fort Wayne, Indiana, as the Associate Dean of the Health Sciences OTD program in Indiana. And Emily Riley actually has experience in home health as well as being an entrepreneur here in Arizona. So super excited to bring you a conversation with both of them. So more specifically, Emily is actually an entrepreneur at a place called Purposefully Home, and that's here in Arizona. And before we dig in, I just want the listeners who may have listening sensitivities to know that there was a fan that would come on in the background that was a bit uncontrollable for this episode. So if you do have specific listening needs, please be aware of that for this particular episode. And feel free to send me an email if you want to have a conversation or you want me to fill you in on this if it was difficult to listen to. Okay, thanks for your patience and for being here. Here we go. So welcome back. This is the Home Health Occupational Therapy Explorer podcast. And this is Monica, and we are actually coming to you live from Embassy Suites in Phoenix, Arizona at the Arizona State Conference for OTs. And I have with me two special guests that did not know probably this morning that they were going to be on a podcast. And it's a real treat. So I have to my left Dr. Ruth Ford, who's the Associate Dean of Health Sciences and is the OTD Program Director of the Huntington University Program in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And to my right, I have Emily Riley, who is an occupational therapist here in Phoenix, mm-hmm. in the Phoenix surrounding area. And she's done, both actually have experience in home health and have branched out into their careers into some new pathways. And so we just wanted to come to the table to really begin talking about what we're learning here, what brings us together, and kind of how this affects the home health OT audience. So perhaps we'll start with you.
Well, Dr. Ford here. I have had the joys of being in home health in a number of different states, and I can see now the importance of the home health occupational therapist who is able to keep those 30-day readmissions to a minimum. Many times, occupational therapists now are helping with discharge planning, whether it's from mm-hmm. the ICU, actually in the ER, or in long-term care. We are making the decision whether they go to home health instead of being admitted, or making sure that they don't have that readmission.
Yes.
So home health is so vital for occupational therapy practice.
Yes.
And I was excited to hear at today's conference how many pediatric home health therapists here in Arizona.
Yes.
What a great market to work with everything from autism to children with developmental disabilities or the early intervention. Really exciting.
Yes, I agree. And you also, there's something else that brings you to neighborhood.
Well, Huntington University is based in Huntington, Indiana, yes, but the city of Peoria, Arizona, mm-hmm. has invited the occupational therapy program to come to Peoria because of the great need there is for occupational therapists to provide levels of care. And Huntington University is more unique in the sense that we are a Christian-based university, and we're not here to compete with the other OT programs in the state, but actually to help complement them and also create some niche market that maybe better meets a student need or complements the faculty that we have, mm-hmm. but also just drive the healthcare delivery services or the educational or even the home health.
Yes, that sounds wonderful. And it's 2021, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, January of 2021. We're currently working on accreditation. We're already approved by the Department of Education in Arizona. The Higher Learning Commission has already given us the go-ahead for accredited program. Mm-hmm. And now we're working on the Occupational Therapy or the Accreditation Council for Occupational Therapy Education, which we frequently refer to as ACOED.
Oh, yes.
So our candidacy application is due in March, or actually April of this 2020. And then we will start admitting for January of 2021.
Which is incredible. So a pre-welcome to the neighborhood.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Right.
And supporting the community.
Right. As a fellow entrepreneur,
yes.
Which Emily comes to us as. And so there's also some job opportunities at Huntington. If there are OTs who are wanting to be guest lecturers or actual full-time faculty or
Adjuncts. We are welcoming OTAs to come. Certainly OTRs with master's or bachelor's, or you specifically need full-time faculty with an earned doctorate. And we're looking for a program director. The good thing about Huntington University, we already have a curriculum that's been well-tested. We're one of the oldest OTD programs in the country. We also have the very first bachelor's of occupational therapy assistant in the country, too. So we're kind of entrepreneurial as a university.
Fantastic.
And we're looking for partners, both from the educational standpoint, but then also through other universities' connections. We have been able to talk with people from Midwestern University, AT Still, and also Northern Arizona.
Wonderful.
And the Pima students were just delightful to talk with today.
I totally agree.
The entrepreneurial bubble, I think, spills a bit over to you, Emily. So you,
yeah,
tell us a little bit about your story and what you're up to.
So I have always thought about leadership and program development. That's kind of where my heart has been. And older adults is my little niche love. So I worked, in management and skilled nursing, and then I switched to acute care. And so over my career, I've been able to see when people end up kind of in that long-term care setting, and then on the other side in the acute care, and just whenever you ask what people's goals are, their goal is to return home.
Yeah.
They want to be back with family. And so that's kind of how I created Purposefully Home, because I really saw the gap in care, the way our system is designed now in any setting. You see and you talk about the care team, and everybody does their little piece for discharge planning and helping people. We get them back to doing their ADLs, but then we don't have time or the ability to really coordinate that care training for their families and the caregivers.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of really how I came up with the concept, to be able to bridge that gap and so support the transition when people go home. And doing the home safety assessments,
yeah,
and being able to actually spend that time with the clients. Like, they worked so hard to get to that point, but now they're in their home and it's completely different.
Yeah.
And so now they're back to kind of not being able to do some of those important things.
Right.
So that's really important to me in working in home health, kind of in a more non-traditional,
yes,
home health, is getting them out of their bedrooms and out of the living room, because that's typically where people end up with the equipment,
yes,
and the inappropriate equipment,
yeah,
or the unused equipment, just,
yes,
because they don't know what to do with it,
yeah,
once it's dropped off.
Yes. And so you're really talking about, you're more or less an OT who's in the home,
mm-hmm,
who is working with people who are no longer on home health for whatever reason, or maybe,
right,
were never started in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually a lot of people that kind of fall through the cracks, or they are not necessarily qualified.
Yeah.
So I work kind of with group homes or people that have kind of,
sure,
lived in group home settings, and they're either finally able to return back to their homes. People on hospice,
mm-hmm,
being able to help them, because just because you're on hospice doesn't mean,
yeah,
you're not capable of,
right,
engaging and doing things.
Right.
So working on kind of some of those. But then, yeah, a lot of people that have these chronic conditions that just think it's okay that they fall all the time, and it's,
yeah,
okay that their hand doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
And they just kind of let somebody else do it for them. So.
Yes. So are there certain situations that would be good for us as traditional home health OTs to know about, in especially the Phoenix area, where we could make a referral to you? I maybe have one in mind, but
yeah. So, I mean, I do some home health,
traditional
home health as well, but so I kind of have an idea of how that works and operates.
Yeah.
So great clients kind of for my model, I guess, are when those services are over. And so you kind of maybe do the basic setup of the environment and maybe the equipment, and being able to take over that next step and really do a more detailed home assessment and go room to room, and not just focusing on transfers and ADLs, but really focusing on, okay, let's empty out the kitchen cabinets and redesign it in a sense, kind of that pre-step before people are getting an actual home modification.
Yes.
But also working with people if they're like, oh no, this doesn't work, we have to rip out the bathroom or the kitchen, and working with them to design it and,
yeah,
help with finding a contractor that's, willing, able,
yeah,
and open,
yeah,
to making those suggestions.
Yes.
Because not every contractor is qualified to do home modifications. Mm-hmm. And I think home modifications and aging in place and living in place, and I think a lot of the terms are so confusing or just so thrown around now that it can be overwhelming. And if somebody wants to do a walk-in shower, they'll call and do a walk-in shower, and that's great. But us as OTs in the community can think about, okay, well, you need a caregiver to do that shower. So these walk-in showers are still narrow or still have glass doors that now they have to manipulate. And so the floor space isn't wide enough. There's not turnaround space.
Yeah.
And so thinking of those extra details, that's kind of where I step in.
It's huge. And we talked about probably private pay and Part B.
Yeah.
Could be some coverage for
this. So I have, I'm a Medicare Part B provider. Mm-hmm. So that really helps support the people that don't necessarily qualify for the home health. You know, mm-hmm. they're walking the household distances and PT says they don't need any more therapy. So here we are, OT stuck because we're not able on the Medicare side, Medicare Part A side. So as a Part B provider, we're able to go in and still provide those services that they need in the home because maybe they don't have the ability to get out to the community.
Genius.
And then private pay to really specialize and focus on maybe some of those kind of extra details while still using that OT lens.
Love it.
And you can certainly curtail a lot of the additional costs for caregivers and certainly keep them in place much longer by being able to make simpler modifications that are really long-term a big cost savings to the family or to the individual.
Yeah, and I think that's where OTs in home health have such a great opportunity to kind of coordinate and help with that transition with the caregivers that are coming in and the bath aides that are coming in and identifying some of the things that primary care physicians are concerned about, falls and readmissions and emergency room visits because of some of those things that us as OTs that are in the home can prevent and avoid and educate. So I definitely think there's a big opportunity for OTs in the home and home health setting to really advocate and educate. And I don't know, you know, we kind of get stuck in our system. So I'm not sure what you know, Dr. Ford, if you have any insights and recommendations too.
Well, the thing that occupational therapists do is find the occupations or the activities that are so meaningful to that client. And being in the home environment is so critical because that's where they have their normal roles and habits and routines. And if you take them out of their home, suddenly they lose so much of their function and their drive. So what you're doing is so critical to having that quality of life and certainly being engaged in those meaningful occupations. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those things that we teach to our doctoral students that it's a client-centered approach and that you really need to have that occupation as the core to your education, but then how you practice with your clients that will make a difference in the functional outcomes.
And to that point, I feel like one of the things that really hit home today in one of the sessions was the value over volume, and really also talking about the templates that are available now are kind of the checklist through AOTA. And I know there is a great one that they just created for home health OTs, really emphasizing that we can do the occupational profile and that activity analysis and really staying true to it. Because I think a question that I would love to hear from you both on is this obvious forecast we have for massive change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like the elephant in the room, is that the next 12 months of the healthcare system, especially in home health, I guess, after January 1st, I should say, with the PDGM changes, could look really different. And I appreciated just calling it out to be like, the change is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we ride the wave? And so I'm curious to hear both of your thoughts on what you would maybe suggest for home health OTs especially that we can do to really prepare that we ride that wave instead of get crushed under it.
Well, hospitals have already gone through it, mm-hmm. long-term care has already gone through it, is knowing the legislative requirements, but also really building on the OT's distinct value and showing quality and value back to the consumer, but back to the third-party payers. If you could show how you cut cost or you become more efficient yeah. at how you deliver the services or get more value out of the services, there will be funding allocated yeah. for that. Mm-hmm. Or even families willing to pay out of pocket mm-hmm. as realizing how important it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the points that some of the people in the audience had made too that I found helpful was working with, I guess, your team, you know, in most recently because October 1st is coming, so in the skilled setting, but eventually too in the home health setting, is we have emphasized at AOTA the functional cognition and how OT can really help and promote that. And we do that because we're assessing if they're capable of doing those yeah. higher level things and sequencing tasks and being able to do it appropriately and safely. But how it's not documented. And so there's no or very little evidence to support that. And mm-hmm. so that's kind of why some of this is so crushing mm-hmm. because we haven't done that legwork to show our distinct value. Mm-hmm. And so I think moving forward, now is such a great opportunity to identify some of those areas. So, I mean, I keep referencing fall prevention because that's one of the highest yeah. cost reasons people are going to the hospital and morbidity. Yeah. yeah. And so kind of identifying that in whichever, and how can that be an opportunity? So finding those niche areas within your community and identifying what, you know, what OT can do about it and tracking that. So what outcome measures are you using, and really using them not just to say because you have to, oh, it's a medium eval, so I have to do one, here's the one I'm going to do, but really identifying which one would be appropriate,
right?
And then keeping that, you know, whether you take it to your leader or keep it for yourself, yeah. but if there's a way you can get your team to really track that, and working with some of the primary care organizations too.
But it's also important to use standardized assessments that help
right.
accurately in measuring and being able to show and document the outcomes in order to get that distinct value of what OT really does bring to that interprofessional team, and working collaboratively, not in competition with your other colleagues, but looking how you can streamline or create pathways to get the optimal outcomes for that client. Mm-hmm.
And that is, so two of those are very appropriate and timely points, because one is, I, to this day, still feel this struggle between standardized and objective and measurable. And Karen Vance and I just had this conversation about that the requirement isn't, for Medicare, isn't, it doesn't say standardized, the objective and measurable, and that more of kind of, it, I guess the question that comes up for me is that balance between like best practice and like the tricky part of function and home health, where sometimes it's like, how do I really capture what I'm wanting to do, but putting it in, like, what is the best standardized test for me to use to capture this specific ADL performance? And that sometimes even like the Barthel doesn't catch what it seems like.
That's an outcome measure.
Yes.
So it's not designed to be as an assessment. So using certain subtests or tests, like a lot of the fall prevention measures are very well recognized within the practice areas, where you can document what their risks are, but then also identifying the interventions that relate to the deficits that are identified.
Yeah. And I wonder if you have any off the top of your head too, please feel free to toss them out, because especially I was just looking or thinking more about
fall prevention, like that there's just always seems like there's so much more that can be done, and that in the midst of walking into these houses, sometimes there is so many layers of what's happening.
I always cringe going in, and one opportunity is some of the care facilities and assisted living and independent living when people have, where people have a little bit more autonomy. I mean, obviously the typical house tends to have a lot of issues too.
Yeah.
But when people are moving their house into a smaller space, they, you know, want to keep as much as they can. Yeah. But also now they have the added staff coming in to support, whether it's the bath aid or, you know, medication or dropping off meals, and the staff kind of adding into that living space what's convenient for them. And so us being OTs and especially home health going in and not only working with the client, but I know there some facilities have papers you fill out to say what you did and what you're going to do next. Some require you to do face-to-face with you know, the staff members. So I think that's a really great opportunity to educate and find a way to really sit down so that they better understand what us as OTs do. I had an example that I went into one space and the gentleman was super motivated, but limited just due to some of the weakness and medical stuff going on. And as soon as you walk in, he has use of the wheelchair for mobility, for safety, but he also uses the walker sometimes, so that was unfolded and out, and it's just a one bedroom, you know, apartment. And then in the bathroom, it had the shower chair and the toilet riser, and then the hamper, and then the, you know, the different supplies around, and then the mini fridge and the little kitchenette space, and then the hospital bed. And so, I mean, really, he just had a narrow pathway after all this equipment. And there were better ways to utilize this space. And as we were assessing how he could get in and out of his bed, he was just about to sit down, and I said, your bed is going to collapse. Like, you need to get back to the chair. And he had just sat, and he stood back up, and just as he turned, the bed collapsed because he had moved in, you know, with family assist, and they thought it would be a good idea to put those risers on the adjustable hospital bed to raise it because he was tall. So they had a good concept, but the bed, because of the putting the legs up, it had shifted. And so it had been that way for months or weeks, and it just kind of hit its last straw. And so that's where OT's value. I mean, that I prevented a fall, not on purpose. It wasn't my, you know, mission, but having that eye. And so, you know, with these changes, being able to identify, okay, how can we go in initially and help with these transitions or help with these, you know, new residents moving in. So I think that's a great opportunity for home health agencies or OTs to say, how can we do an initial screening or make some recommendations prior? Here's some layouts of ideal space.
And certainly transition, whether it's from home to an apartment, from home into long-term care or assisted living, or after a natural disaster, you know, I had the opportunity working with students during the Katrina disaster in the New Orleans area, and it was amazing things that we take for granted in time of a disaster for the person that's either aging or with a disability or intellectual disabilities. The challenges are so much more magnified because they may not have their mobility device, or they have to do a transfer. It's not into their normal bed. Or they might have to use a porta potty, or maybe they have to get
a floor mat or something.
Oh, wow. So when we think of home and we make those transitions, an occupational therapist can actually prevent the falls or make sure the equipment that worked at one place would actually fit into the next situation, or how to take that meaningful object that has some sense of permanence in their lives to help them in that transition period. So one of the great things about an occupational therapist, we deal holistically with our client and not just think about what they might need, but how they feel about what's going on around them and how to make others that are the support team more cognizant of those changes.
Yeah, I think you brought up a good point, is having that awareness of differences, and that's one of the sessions today highlighted, kind of cultural sensitivities and just sensitivities to such a diverse population that we work with as OTs. And here in Arizona, you know, we have Native American and the tribes, and so thinking of people that we might be seeing and just different cultures, we're such a hub, and so people don't necessarily have those typical roles that we just might expect, and so not assuming, because people live in non-traditional homes or apartments, they don't have running water or electricity, or they use an outhouse, and you know, and so I think kind of really having that awareness and insight in what we think is normal, we kind of can fall into that trap. So really opening up
our eyes. Also think about generational changes. You know, as young occupational therapists working with an older population, I mean, there's life changes that we have to think about. And as an occupational therapist, you need to be able to talk about, in the occupational profile, what is really of value, or what are some of your life experiences that are going to influence how you age. Or even a young person with an older therapist taking care of them need to understand that, you know, there's so many things happening in our society today, whether it's violence in the school system or whether it is substance abuse or dependence on medications or other substances. We have to understand what's triggered some of those thoughts or some of the things that go into decision making.
Which is so much easier said than done, or perhaps is just the beginning of the peeling back the layers of it too. And I guess it makes it fun. And I feel like that naturally makes me also think of leadership, which you are both very much in, or and I heard you mention leadership on its own. And I sense that the OTs, that there's this like natural call to a deeper sense of leadership among us, especially right now. And I guess I'm curious of what tips you both might have, especially for those practicing in home health OT, to really step into and like lean into this, to kind of like get up onto the surfboard. This analogy has been used a lot today, is to kind of like learn how to ride these waves. And if there are any just like general tips, or if you had to speak to and kind of call out the leadership for home health OTs, what you would say?
Well, definitely learning as much as you can from other colleagues, but going to the original sources, reading and attending conferences, but then also come up with new programs, new processes. Just because we've done it this way for so long, with new legislation and new needs, our persons with disabilities are facing new challenges, whether it's reimbursement, whether there's new science, there's new surgical procedures. There's so many new aspects, even the new technology. All of those create opportunities for occupational therapists in the home, or getting persons ready for discharge to home, to come up with new processes. One of the exciting things about the entry-level doctorate in occupational therapy is they have to do a capstone project. And we see here at Huntington University these students coming up with very creative projects that they work with an organization and a population that has a need, and they write these programs and then they disseminate them after they graduate. Many of them have converted that into a career. But leadership roles is a vital part of any educational program, but as clinicians, we need to really take a lead to make sure that we show that OT distinct value.
I think to highlight that too, and obviously all the different programs have changed, like the educational programs, and I think just from the people I've met at conferences that are in academia have kind of emphasized so much, and that's what they've talked about here today a lot, is the importance of advocacy. And mm-hmm. I think being in home health, it takes kind of an independent thinker anyway, you know, because you don't really have that whole team, mm-hmm. maybe on a conference call yep. or kind of intermittently, but really yep. you're out on your own. Yep. So you're coming up with those creative solutions kind of anyway.
Yes.
So you make a good point on thinking outside of the box mm-hmm. and thinking about technology and how that affects, you know, caregivers that live across the country or other places, and how that can really improve independence. And here coming to Phoenix, it's a huge tech hub. It's always in that business journal, and there's Yes Phoenix is like a startup group. You can ask anybody, I'm like the networking guru. So, yeah. So I just love connecting and thinking outside. Yeah. It doesn't have to just be mm-hmm. like-minded professionals that are OTs. Mm-hmm. That's great, but also kind of joining different groups too, whether mm-hmm. it's just socially and, you know, leisure activities that you're doing and chatting with people,
yeah.
But also just different industries too. And so, yeah, having it be such a technology hub, there's a great opportunity likely for OTs and home health and schools to collaborate and work on some of these projects and ideas. And I think we can kind of think, oh, what if, and
yeah.
oh, if only, but those words, like, I don't go by that. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a way. And so I just think, yeah, being a leader is taking that kind of initiative, but really finding out how. And I have really met so many great people. I met
yes.
some people that were like Tamara from Midwestern.
Yes.
I had gone to a thing at AOTA in New Orleans, and I just overheard something. I was at a thing talking about dementia, and I had no idea how progressive Tempe is and that yeah. they're a dementia-friendly community. And so I had overheard Tamara talk, and so afterwards I like ran up to her and I was like, and so I got to chat with her, and it turns out she was from here. And so she's
awesome.
Been such a great resource, mm. and I've been able mm. to kind of meet different people. And
yeah.
So really just finding out where your supports are.
But one of the exciting things about an occupational therapist is we're natural leaders in the fact that we bring the group together.
Yes.
Our skills in group dynamics, but also therapy use of self, are critical in getting the dynamics of the team working together.
Mm-hmm.
And so we lead the teams many, many times in the interprofessional practice.
Mm-hmm.
We are also the creative ones. We come mm-hmm. up with the ideas mm-hmm. and then we get the buy-in of mm-hmm. our group mates.
Yeah.
But it takes that occupational therapist that thinks holistically, but also has in mind how to get the best results.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I go into the homes and I ask them to, I do the whole interview at the table typically, and then I say, okay, now give me a tour. And whoever their family member is typically speaking for them or over them. And I'm like, that's one of my first things. I'm like, I fire people very quickly. So I'm like, you're fired right now. And so they either just sit quiet and just watch, or they'll leave the room because I've offended them for firing them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always try to make a joke because they do feel like they have to do so much. And so, you know, even taking the initiative with the families, you know, if you're not really interested in a technical leadership role,
right.
You can advocate for the profession in that
yeah.
capacity.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to, you know, be anything broader if that's not your path. But taking that initiative to say, hey, sit down, take a break, educate
yes.
them on why it's okay that maybe the person takes 2 minutes to get out of bed instead of one
yes.
with their help, you know, because you're helping that, you know, that musculoskeletal system mm-hmm. and the lungs and just that autonomy
yes.
And confidence.
And I'm hearing that it's like seeing that even if OTs don't see themselves necessarily in like a quote unquote traditional role
mm-hmm.
of a leader, that there is this like attitude and skill of leadership naturally in you if you're an OT, mm-hmm. and to at very minimum, like, really tap the well of this leadership attitude, especially for, I mean, I guess we don't need to turn it off ever, but especially it seems like for the next 12 plus months.
Yeah, I think it really highlights a point if we recognize some of that fear that people are experiencing with these changes. Yeah. And it's, excuse me, such a integral time to learn about that. So many of us can show up to work, do our job, and leave work, yeah. and not really know how the rest of it's affected. But yeah. when there's big changes like this, and you're like, oh my gosh, they're doing this to us. But what we've learned in some of the sessions today is we've done it to ourselves, mm-hmm. as a profession. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so I think that's why it's so important to gain the education and continue to learn and continue to read and continue to kind of find out how things work, in a sense.
Yeah.
Because it's not as simple as show up and leave.
Yeah.
But remember, the reason you're doing your job is because you want the best outcomes for your client.
Yeah.
If you're doing the best results and you're putting the full effort in, you will rise to the top automatically. Mm-hmm. Families will make comments, the clients will make comments, your partners in your services will recognize that you're adding value to. But you also have to identify your strengths, mm-hmm. identify what you've accomplished with mm-hmm. your clients, mm-hmm. make sure it's well documented, mm-hmm. but you also need to articulate it in team meetings,
yeah.
or through your documentations, and even making additional calls to the physician or to the referring agency so that they keep referring back.
Yeah, using our words. You know, really, like, yeah. using our words to highlight what it is that we're really doing, and not being scared of that sounding like we're bragging, or I think sometimes
right.
it's like, oh, well, I don't want to take up floor time, when really it's like us quote unquote taking up floor time is advocacy. I don't
right.
know an OT who just
mm-hmm.
wants floor time. Like,
no,
that's really not.
You're really...
But we're doing it for our clients.
Exactly.
And if you don't have access to your client, why are you an OT?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on that note, as we kind of wrap things up, I want to just toss out a couple nuggets and invite you guys to toss out any nuggets from today, or just especially for the home health OT. I know something else that really hit home for me today in a talk about working with the LGBTQ community is really language and really being sensitive to even, I love the practical part of this, of just not assuming, you know, when we go in and ask people about their spouse, we can say spouse or partner, not husband or wife. And then also, we were just talking about not assuming that people are ready to be naked to bathe, which I don't think we
mm-hmm.
really talk about that much, but is it appropriate to actually assume people aren't comfortable and talk to them about it, rather than just like going to a place where they're actually naked with a stranger? And so kind of having that same language around bathing.
Yeah, I think that's super important. I had an example when I was collaborating with another discipline. And we went in, this was not in a home health setting, but we had gone in, and I'm slow. I'm an OT, so I like to get to know people. And he did want to use the restroom, and was standing. And the nurse barged in, and not. I was trying not to say which discipline, but can you edit that out? Barged in and overheard the conversation, and swooped up the urinal and pulled down the pants. And we were like helping him stand, and and he looked at us. It was mortifying because we weren't there yet.
Yeah.
You know, there was just some steps, and, you know, it was out of being helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we do things to be helpful to our clients.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, really being aware of our body language.
Yeah.
That was a big one today too, and our language.
Mm-hmm.
And also the timing and pacing of any activity. And when there is the cross gender issues, then you need to have be a little bit more respectful and ask mm-hmm. them questions. Yeah. Okay, yeah. How are we going to do this right. today?
Yeah.
What are you going to be comfortable with?
Yeah.
Or, you know, using a little bit of humor so it mm-hmm. kind of lightens yeah. the yeah, mood. Yeah, yeah. Or, you know what, I think it's that time that maybe getting in the shower for the first time after surgery would feel awfully good. How can we make this the most comfortable for you, mm-hmm. but also safe? And we can't just let them say, well, I'll go in there by myself.
Right,
and
right. Then
you have
right.
to scrape them off the ground.
Yeah, later. Exactly.
But, you know, building that relationship and comfort level that, you know, it's not your first time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
So, constant collaboration.
And it's interesting, it's easier for a woman to work with a male bathing than a man or male mm-hmm. OTA or OTR.
Yeah. Yeah.
To treat a female.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was kind of thinking that in some of our discussions today, because we are predominantly female profession,
mm-hmm.
is not only the some of the kickback that, you know, our patients get, but some that, you know, some of our colleagues get
mm-hmm.
as a result of some of those issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's been interesting working with male therapists. And their almost fear of being accused of touch. And so some of those sexual assaults or sexual battery or whatever you want to call it, just because of our societal shift now and how they interpret touch.
Yeah.
So it takes a little bit more awareness and processing, both as a therapist, but then also more explanation to the client.
Yeah, especially being in their homes.
Alone.
Yeah.
Well, I think the one last thing, I was at the booth or across from me was the pant riser, pantriser.com.
Oh, yeah. That was
which
pretty
is
amazing.
Super interesting. So you can watch a video about them, but they clip to the front of pants and then they kind of loop around.
Yeah, they're like a modified suspender.
Yeah. Sort of. So when you stand up, it pulls the pants up, not all the way. I mean, maybe depending on the person or the adjustment of it, but it may be appropriate for some of your home health OT patients, so you may want to check out pantriser.com. And also, before we close up, will you let listeners know if they want more information to talk to you or about the program or Heidi to work with you or reach out to you? Will you just let them know how they can reach you?
Okay, I'm Dr. Ruth Ford. I'm at Huntington University in Fort Wayne, Indiana. The best way to reach me is ruth.ford@huntington.edu. We will be coming out to Peoria, Arizona in the coming months, and we will be able to provide you with some additional information about not only educational opportunities at the doctoral level, but also if you're interested in being a guest lecturer, adjunct, or a full-time faculty at the doctoral level, we would love to have a chance to talk with you. My phone number is 260-702-9620. And thanks very much, Monica, for this wonderful opportunity to talk with you.
It's
and
my pleasure.
Also with you, Emily.
Yeah, thank you.
So my pleasure.
This has been fun. So I'm here in the Valley. Purposefully Home is my company. And you can find me on social media, Facebook and Instagram. Also, you can visit my website is www.purposefullyhome.com, and that has my email and all my contact information. So if you just want to learn more, if you have any clients in mind or case manager, social worker friends,
yeah, pass it on. We're all about it.
I'm happy to help. Also, and this is helpful for anybody, there is talking about leadership, Next Level Visionary. If you go on Facebook, there's a free group. It's called Next Level OT, I believe. And so it's a wonderful place for OTs interested in leadership or entrepreneurship. It's just like a great place, especially collaborating, sharing ideas.
You said
so
it's Facebook?
It's on Facebook. Okay. There is another membership platform, but if you go to Facebook, that's free and you can kind of learn more about it from there.
Sweet. Sounds mm-hmm. great. And if you haven't yet, encouragement to plug into your state and national association and memberships, because that's what's really helped bring us together here for this conversation.
Yeah. So, also, I'm the second year board member. Certainly join our Arizona board. You know, we're really doing a lot of great things. The legislative board has been super active. Yeah. Just our program is really growing here and our membership. So definitely check out the website. Join us, because your membership really helps us grow it in our state and hopefully overflow into some of the national organization.
And that's Arizota.
Yep.
www.arizota.com.
Correct.
.com. And yes, the quote I think was, "Together we all achieve more," or yes, something like that. Teamwork makes the dream work. That's what I like to say. Okay, thank you so much for listening. Hey, holy smokes, what a packed episode. Thank you so much for listening. And as a quick correction, at the very end there, we said Arizota.com. It's actually Arizota.org. So if you are going to check that out, just a quick correction to that. And thank you so much for listening. If you're digging the content here and you want to stay in the loop on a deeper level, check out www.homehealthotexplorer.com. And you can sign up for the funny emails that also have links to these episodes. And share this episode with somebody that you think may genuinely enjoy it. Do watch for more information on a one-day event that I'm planning for passionate home health OTs. It'll be February 29th, 2020 in Peoria, Arizona. And it's called Till and Water. So more information coming soon. If you want to be the first to get that information, make sure to sign up for the emails. So drive safe, count your blessings, and keep exploring. And truly, thank you so much for listening. So this is called The Whole Sea Manifesto, and apparently it was written by David Mike Radparvav. So there's also a mention of a Fabian who was part of this, but it goes like this. This is your life. Do what you want and do it often. If you don't like something, change it. If you don't like your job, quit. If you don't have enough time, stop watching TV. If you're looking for the love of your life, stop. They will be waiting for you when you start doing things you love. Stop overanalyzing. Life is simple. All emotions are beautiful. When you eat, appreciate every last bite. Life is simple. Open your heart, mind, and arms to new things and people. We are united in our differences. Ask the next person you see what their passion is and share your inspiring dream with them. Travel often. Get lost. Getting lost will help you find yourself. Some opportunities only come once. Seize them. Life is about the people you meet and the things you create with them. So go out and start creating. Life is short. Live your dream and wear your passion.